Welcome to Things I Wish I Knew, the podcast from Thinking Faith, a work of the Jesuits in Britain. My name's Julia, I'm 31, and I live in London in a Jesuit young adult community. So we all live hectic lives and often don't get time to reflect on what's happening, both to us and around us. This podcast is meant to help you to take a moment to stop and to think about where you are, where you're going, and where your relationship with God fits into it all. Every week, I'll meet a new guest who tells me about something they've experienced which changed them forever. By talking about the things that they wish they'd known at the time, we'll explore the idea that God is in all things. We'll talk about the part that faith plays in navigating life's challenges. So today I'm speaking to Bikani, and what I really loved about this conversation is how Bikani talks about being creative and following a career that brings her joy and follows her passion. So it's really taught me a lot. Bikani was born in Zimbabwe. She's an artist, she's a climate activist, and she's a member of the Young Adult Ministries here at Farmer Street. Today's episode is called Things I Wish I Knew Before I Became an Artist. So, Bikani, what was the first piece of art you created?
My instinct is to think about work that I made right at the beginning of my journey. So I had been interning in an investment bank and hating my life. And a friend recommended that I go on this creativity course. Felt very yuppie and I was very skeptical to say the least, but I recognized the need to do something that didn't have to be absolutely perfect, and specific, which my job, I had to be very accurate and very, precise. And it was nice to do something very loose. So we're invited to do this sort of abstract, just play with color. And I responded really well to that. I absolutely loved it. And what I loved was the process of it. So I started making a painting a day, but I would throw them out because it was really about the process of just doing something that, you know, is my stamp in the world. I was here today. I guess that's probably the difference between a sketch and an artwork. I consider an artwork to be something that's far more intentional, that has both the, you know, action of making something and using your materials to transform what you're making into something meaningful to others. So I didn't really grow up going to art galleries or anything. And I used to clean after school as my part-time job. And one of my beat classes was the art room. So when I moved with my family from Zimbabwe, I was 13 and I had to catch up on maths and sciences. So I unfortunately dropped music, Spanish and art, and did maths, chemistry and physics instead. So my real exposure to art as a teenager was cleaning this art room and having some really lovely conversations with the art teacher, but not really in a consistent way making any work until I was about 21. I guess the closest to any creative output would be debating and public speaking. I found that to be a way of, it's ironic because I don't consider myself in any way a performance artist. I couldn't do that. I find it really difficult and nervous even just to think about. But that's the closest to a creative output I had.
Because your other life wasn't so creative, was it? You were doing a degree?
Yeah, I studied politics with economics, and that's what led me to that internship. And then afterwards, I had a startup, and again, that was in sustainability, and it started as a consultancy and became a software company. And yes, it's creative in the way that you're problem solving and wanting to be innovative and having to forge, you know, something new, but it wasn't artistic in the way that we normally think of at all. And yeah, so to answer that first question, the first artwork I made was a painting while I was on internship, and I threw it out because I thought it was terrible. And I went for a dinner at a friend's flat who lived on the same floor, but in a different flat in the same building. And he had this painting in his living room. And I didn't say initially that it was mine. I just said, oh, I didn't know you were interested in art. You know, what's this painting? And he said, oh, these spoilt brats in this building are always chucking, you know, beautiful things out. And, you know, they don't even know the value of something good when they see it. And I was like, well, actually, it's one of my works. And it taught me to realize that sometimes when we do something that is good for us, it might also be, you know, a gift to others. And I had thought of it as very much a way of my being resilient and a way of my, you know, finding joy in my day. But yeah, that taught me something about vocation, and that, it, you know, if it gives something to others, then.
So is that the point when you became an artist?
It was about 10 years before I made that commitment. Because, yeah, I didn't think it was an option for me. You know, growing up, I hadn't known other artists. I didn't know what that would look like as a career, you know. And I tend to like to discern, and you can tell, like, the Jesuit influence, maybe. And so really I made that commitment while on Camino. I made the Ignatian Camino in Spain. It's from Loyola to Manresa. And I remember, so we did it once a year for 4 years. We did a quarter of the journey with the Young Adults Ministry based at Farm Street and led by Sister Nuska at the time. And I always think you have people in your life who guide you towards the thing that you're supposed to do. And always being asked this question of, well, what is your vocation? You know, it felt like every week at some points. And, but also being given the tools to learn and to discern, how can I figure out if something is my vocation? And I remember parts of those conversations being about, you know, is it something that comes naturally to you? Is it something that you're interested in already? And at that point, I had started going to galleries and learning more. And I remember being in Montserrat. So it's this like comedic mountain. Doesn't feel comedic when you're walking it, by the way, because every time you think you've reached the top of it and you can finally rest for the day, it turns out it's actually just another valley coming up, and it's called Montserrat Serrated Mountain. So it's like a jagged mountain. And so I'd been praying about this, you know, that whole time, like, God, I need a clearer sign that this is the path you want me to follow, that this is what I'm meant to do with my life. And felt like really I hadn't had a response, not that I expected a, you know, parting in the sky or whatever, but I didn't feel like I had confirmation that this was where I should be going. And when we got to Montserrat, there's a beautiful, is that a basilica? I think it's a basilica, where Saint Ignatius, according to tradition, gave up his armor and his weapons, and he left them at the statue of the Black Madonna. And, you know, I went to said a prayer, but I thought about what is this thing of, you know, what is my armor? What is it that I use to defend myself against the world? Or what is the identity that I've put on? And what do I need to change? And what am I willing to now leave? And what do I now want to take up? And at this time, I'm still thinking, all right, God, where have you been? I'm still not hearing a response. And I met this Benedictine monk who was just outside. And I said, oh, you know, I've been praying all day. By the way, he didn't speak English really. So in sort of Spanishy, Frenchy, German, we got to this that, like, you know, I'm not getting a response. And he said, you know, we have a couple of paintings downstairs. Why don't you go try praying with that? And I hadn't mentioned the art thing at all. And so I felt like this is at least a sign and a direction. And by the way, I thought he meant, you know, a few of the monks had made like some watercolors that I could go and pray with. And it's extraordinary. It was this combination of work that is about faith, but not directly so. And I was really, really inspired by that. And it was, you know, lots from art history, very famous names, but also contemporary works and modern ways of dealing with biblical scenes or theology. And yeah, no, I left, yeah, with this sense of peace, like, okay.
So you left with that sense of peace, and then you got home, and then you became Bacani the artist.
No. I at least made the commitment. I think I have the sort of personality that, okay, God, I will now follow this path. But I could also see ways in which, you know, being an artist isn't like a defined thing. Like, you go to your studio and you make work. That's kind of what people think of. But there's a lot that's around it. So I knew I needed, well, I thought I needed to go and get a master's and retrain, essentially. And there's some people who are completely self-taught and brilliant. Maybe for my own confidence. So I applied to a few art schools and then did a master's. And alongside that, started just making work more consistently. And yeah, I guess that is when I became Bacani. I can't say it.
You became Bacani, the artist. So Bacani, as I said before, you're an artist, but you're also a climate activist. So how does your art then fit into your activism?
I think they sort of, it's a symbiotic relationship. And, you know, you need to also be able to live as an artist. So until people discover your work and, you know, are buying your work and supporting your practice that way, most artists, you know, work alongside their, you know, they teach. And I'm really, really, I feel very blessed and lucky that I get to do work that directly inspires my art practice. So been interested in sustainability as a broader topic for a while, but specifically around climate, I think in about 2015, reading Laudato Si as part of the young adults community and as part of my role in the parish, it really just resonated with me and really struck me that there are these patterns of interconnectivity. And the patterned abstract paintings that I'd been making at the time, carrying one color to the, you know, from one part of the canvas to another, for me was a direct way of speaking to that interconnectivity and the patterns of connection that we have with each other and with the planet. And, you know, the result with these floral, botanical looking abstract paintings. And I then started thinking a lot more about, well, how have we got to where we are? And the politics behind that and the economics behind that. And so more and more, I felt I needed to be more explicit in what I was saying. And I'd sometimes get a bit frustrated that my paintings weren't being this explicit thing. So I began doing more billboards, which I was lucky enough to publish in 2020-21, and they said more to this intersection between racial justice, climate justice, and explicitly talked to that those patterns of interconnectivity.
I was just going to say that's really clear in your work. Like,
yeah,
I follow you on Instagram, and sometimes you just things come up, and a lot of time I'm just scrolling through Instagram. And then I see your work and it speaks such a powerful message as well. I guess my next question is, does your work then define you?
That is a huge question. I
ask you that question because we were talking before about your work, how we're often with people, so we both work in the climate work, and that can take up a lot of your time and a lot of your energy. And now you're working part-time in that, but you're doing your artwork as well. And I know from your schedule is packed and busy. And I guess the conversation we were having is about what is described as the work-life balance. When it's all-consuming, such as it is with climate activism or artwork, how do you like cope with it all?
I find it helpful to recognize what refreshes me and sort of where are my wells of inspiration and joy and celebration. And I think what's slightly difficult is that when it feels like, okay, this is the thing I was put on the earth to do. I must do it all the time. It can be difficult to recognize when I need to rest and when, ironically, I just did a mural about rest, when I need to slow down and replenish. But in many ways, making this commitment towards art did define me because it's something I could bring all of myself to. I can bring my faith, my background, my history, my full imagination. And at the same time, I think I recognize how there's a danger there that, you know, if I consider my successes or failures as what defines me in being an artist, then I'm doing wrong, sounds so final, but it's not how I want to live my life. It can't be based on the results of what I do, whether, you know, that defines me as a person, but it's, what I and how I do it, not what happens in the wider world. So yes, I would say probably my choice to live as an artist is a very clear and intentional choice, but how the outside world then responds to that has nothing to do with me. And I don't let that define me. It's very hard to do, by the way. I'm very ambitious.
Yeah, I was going to say that's whether you're an artist or campaigning or anything, really, not letting the outside world define you is a tough challenge for everyone. Like, it's something I think everyone struggles with. I probably struggle with it. So have you got any good tips on how to cope with it?
Prayer. I think silence and meditation and our recognition, easier said, being an artist, but observing and finding moments of beauty that are so sublime, they remind you that you're part of God's world, you're part of a tapestry of other people trying to make the same changes that you're trying to make. I find that really helpful in the work that I do as a campaigner, is recognizing that it's not all dependent on me and, you know, whatever my skills and talents are, you know, I'm part of something. And that often gives me quite, just a relax. It's not all about you.
When you were talking earlier about your time when you were discerning about whether to go into artwork, you talked about armor and taking off an armor. Do you feel you've had to replace that with an artist, Bacani the artist armor? Or do you think you've like done it successfully? Maybe not successful is the right word, but do you think you've been able to manage to leave that armor behind and not replace it with a different armor? Or?
Yeah, I guess the armor then was like my thinking of myself as like this startup entrepreneur, professional, go-getter, girl boss kind of thing. And ironically, yes, those skills are useful because it means that I can manage my studio and I'm driven and it allows me to focus in certain ways and it allows me to be effective. But I think it's similar to kind of, so arrogant to say, but I'll go here, where Ignatius was a soldier and that the skills and, okay, the overblown confidence that he had in himself at times, God could still use that. And so recognizing that God can still use those parts that I'm sometimes not a big fan of in myself. And I suppose I replaced it with a different armor. And it's kind of ironic, whenever I do, you know, go to art events or whatever, I usually wear one color, which is like a way of getting rid of decision-making in my day. But it's also quite intentional because I enjoy this new armor. I mean, Ignatius wore sackcloth and that's very much not my vibe. It makes me feel comfortable going into spaces that I think I might need armor, because they're sometimes scary. Like, the art world is not easy. And I've been very lucky that I've met wonderful people, shared values, shared sense of joy and, you know, acknowledgement of the great privilege that we get to do this in our lives. And, you know, thanks to previous generations and their work and getting to meet some of those people. But sometimes I do think I need that armor, so...
Because I was just thinking, I think often people think an artist's job is just to be in the studio creating a piece of work. And then when they've done with that, they send that off and then they're on to the next piece of work. But actually, knowing you and having seen your work, you've made me open my eyes to like how much work there is as an artist, about how much self-promotion there is, about going to all of like the different events, meeting the right people, getting your work seen, that... I don't even know how you have time to do any work in the studio.
Even just the logistics of the materials, you know, getting, I mean, that's the doing part. But there's also, I feel like the doing part is the tip of the iceberg. And below that, for me, there's a lot of research. I'm reading a lot. And this is why actually my work in the climate space informs what I do in the studio. But there's a lot of thinking about what the topics that I'm talking about. So I have to think, pray, feel through my artwork. So I need the space and the silence and the time to, yeah, contemplate like which poetic resources do I want to draw upon to translate that into a painting. My choices of color are informed by different experiments in the studio with the materials of, you know, if I use this color on this surface, what's the result? How does that make me feel? And there's like a chemistry element, there's a physics element, and, you know, does this installation stay up? And that more research side of making art isn't obvious, it's not seen. And so unless you go to an artist talk or a lecture, or you hear a curator talk about an artist practice, it's really hard to bear that in mind. And so often I think that's what I need to be more disciplined about, is creating space for that silence, space for that contemplation and research and experimentation.
So how do you find, because I'm terrible at this, trying to find the space for the silence and the contemplation. So how do you make that space? Because you're very busy. You're doing all of your artwork. You're doing 3 days a week working on climate action. So how do you find that space in your life?
I try and do a silent retreat once a year. This is a plug for St. Bino's. I'm not paid to advertise, but, you know, I could be a influencer for them. I really love Bino's.
So St. Bino's, for anyone who doesn't know, is a Jesuit retreat center.
I also try and find within my day to day moments of just quiet stillness or observation. And the nice thing about, you know, being an artist, and I recommend this for people who don't necessarily consider themselves an artist, just find or look for something beautiful in your day. It could be, you know, a perfect cup of tea, which for me really is an art form, and a sense of just that appreciation that, oh, somebody's made me a lovely cup of tea, or a beautiful flower. It can be really fleeting, but the moment of noticing it for me will refresh me for 4 to 5 hours. You know, it's very, very small, but the impact on my experience of the day is, yeah.
Just going to come back to St. Bino's, because I remember when I was first told about a silent retreat, and I'm about to do one in 2 weeks' time for 6 days of complete silence, apart from half an hour, 40 minutes when I can talk to a spiritual director. And if you'd asked me about that 2-3 years ago, I'd have been like, no, there's no way I can manage a silent retreat. But it's just incredible to see like how that can change your viewpoint. Because I remember last September, I went on a 6 day silent retreat, feeling a bit overwhelmed by everything. A lot had been going on, and came out of it just feeling fully refreshed. Mm. And that idea of like 6 days of silence, just praying with God, being present, because Bino's, they say it when you get there, it's one of the easiest places to pray in, can just really change your outlook and things. Have you found that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I so much of what you say resonates. Like, we live very full lives, but also I feel like I came out of lockdown and I was leaning very much into an introversion that I hadn't really, if you know me, I'm always out and about. I love having conversations like this. And having moments of just, what does God's voice sound like to me? You know, is it in just the breeze and that quiet stillness? And learning to be comfortable with being alone and not being lonely. That the first time I went on a silent retreat, that was why I went, because I needed to know, do I like me? And what is that experience like? And do I like me in God's gaze, which I felt like Bino's gave me. And that gave me an incredible sense of peace. There's something to do with not performing. I guess I can go back to that again, where the silence allows you to, take off a different armor and take off a different load that we don't realize we're bearing, because we hold ourselves in very specific postures and work, social spaces. And at Bino's, you can just be. And that's really rare, an opportunity.
That's interesting, because that's what I really took away from my retreat last September, was the emphasis on just being and not doing. And I loved when you just said about being comfortable being alone, because I think for so many people, but particularly in this day and age with social media and things, there's just this always feeling of being lonely. But actually being on your own doesn't mean you have to be lonely. So I guess my final question for you, Bakani, is what are the things you wish you knew before you become an artist?
I wish I'd started earlier. And I think I really didn't understand the way in which God puts certain things in your heart. And I think those desires guide you towards a closeness with God. And they can also be of service. And I think it would have been really helpful to realize that being creative is not necessarily a self-indulgent, you know, it's not a self-indulgence or a luxury. And that actually it's as necessary as eating healthy food. That would have been really helpful to understand before, and because it would have made me feel less guilty about, you know, wanting this. I also wish I had understood a bit better how to deal with rejection and feedback and self-determination. So recognizing that, look, I don't have to have yeses every, you know, that's not what makes me an artist. What makes me an artist is this intention of making something that's meaningful in the world. And whether or not people buy a painting or put it in a show or is recognized within my lifetime. Yeah, I think that Ignatian detachment would have been really, helpful thing. Yeah, and the logistics, my goodness. There's so much that I didn't really recognize, you know, and understand. And a friend who I met through the young adults community, Tim Patrick, who's a wonderful painter, I shared a studio with him, which is how I first got my foot in the door in getting a studio. And just seeing how he organized, you know, the paintings rack and just how he looked after his workspace. I wish I'd gone to more open studios just to understand, okay, how do you manage this space and how do you understand what you're making?
They're excellent. So if people want to find out more about your art, they can do what I did this morning, which terrible that I only did it this morning, but they can find you through your newsletter or on your website, can't they?
Yeah, that's right. So it's artbiobakani.com.
Thank you so much, Bakani. This has been a great chat. So thank you for listening to Things I Wish I Knew. I know this episode is going to stay with me, and I'm going to reflect on the fact that Bakani talked about that she'd wish she'd done it sooner, that she'd wish she'd followed her passion. Please do recommend this to a friend, and I'm really interested to know what's resonated with you, Bakani's story. So why not tell us if you're facing an experience you wish you knew how to look at differently? It might just be something we can help with. So do write to me at jcorcoran@thinkingfaith.org and find more about the themes we've discussed today at thinkingfaith.org. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next time on Things I Wish I Knew.